This is Alpha Geek Radio.
Hereby, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast, episode 205, the Nerdtacular episode. And with me tonight is Joel Duggan of Star-Crossed Online. It's not really night, but we usually do this at nighttime.
It's usually nighttime for
right.
both of us, yeah.
But it's nighttime where I'm from, right?
Wait, it's nighttime at home.
Right, it's nighttime at home. It's 3:07 Mountain Time.
So that's 6 o'clock.
Evening.
It's a dinner time. It's dinner theater.
That's about what time we record usually, too, so that's not bad.
No, for me, it's 8 o'clock.
It's just after 5 back home? Very good. Hey, you do a comic called Star-Crossed Online.
I do.
You do, and you just got here because you were downstairs signing, because for those who don't know what Nerdtacular is, it's in Utah. It's a once-a-year event that Scott Johnson of Frog Pants, who is how do you want to call him, our parent?
I guess so.
That's a good way to put it. He's kind of our parent.
Podfather.
He is the podfather of funk. So, he puts on this shindig once a year, and oh my God, it's a fantastic thing. This year we're doing it in Snowbird, Utah for the second year in a row.
Beautiful.
Last year we had a landslide from the bad weather. This year it's been beautiful.
Except for the moths.
I'm sorry. There are some...
Moth-pocalypse.
Moth-pocalypse. I was really worried because when I was on the elevator, it said, watch out for moths. And I thought, well, if they're putting a warning, they must be really big, like those you've seen on the internet, like the really big moths. But no, they're just kind of small.
Normal size,
annoying little... I have that many back home in South Carolina. I don't even know why there's even a need to put up a sign.
Must be different
than
normal here.
Right. Anyway, that's where we're at. We're at Nerdtacular 2014 at the Snowbird in Utah. And Joel Duggan just got through signing some books for his Star-Crossed Online, which you can see, starcrossedonline.com.
Yep, I've got one book left. And it's already earmarked for Xander. So he came up at the last minute. He's like, great. I have to go. I will put your name in it. Just come see me after the panel. So I've got none left. I couldn't bring any more on the plane.
Right.
We only had carry-ons. So.
Well, that's books are heavy, too. Man.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can only bring so many before your back just snaps.
Yep.
I've seen Joel's back's not going to snap. Also, Matthew Ducharme, Matt the Wad, he's with us here as well. As well as his beautiful wife, Lana.
Oh, indeed.
Right. And so, Matt, this is your first trip out to Nerdtacular.
It is. And so far, I love it. Awesome location.
Right.
Equally awesome people. So,
and we've been talking about it for weeks now, coming up, that we were going to meet for the first time. And we did meet for the first time. I saw you yesterday, and it was the most amazing thing. It was kind of like that little moment in my mind where it was on the beach, just me and you, and and running towards each other. But Tom Merritt,
slow motion.
It is totally slow motion.
All right.
And but
I got to ask, was I the girl?
You were absolutely the girl.
long flowing hair.
Oh, sweet! I got hair again.
You got hair, which I didn't know. I mean, I've seen pictures of you, but there's less hair there than I thought. And Joel, he's totally decided to get rid of his hair.
Though.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think Matt's on purpose, too. I think he could grow a pretty sweet ponytail in the back if he wanted to.
I had one.
Did you really?
Long, long ago, back in the day.
That's scary. All right. So like I said, we are the Snowbird. We're in a superior room. If you're listening to us live, we're streaming live, and we're also being videotaped. So watch your mouth, Joel. And so, good job. And... we don't have really a format or a plan other than we're just going to kind of talk about some of the great interviews we've had on Comics Coast, because we have done 205 interviews. And, man, I mean, if there's a cartoonist that you can think of or animator, I mean, we've probably at least talked to them or someone who's related to them. Is there any interview that you guys, is there any cartoonist or animator out there that you're just you just follow religiously out there? The audience, is there anybody out there that's just like, oh, my God, I have to follow every week. I got to follow Bill Watterson because we never interviewed him, though.
No. If we got that would be mind-blowing.
But we did talk to Stefan Pastis, like, on episode 2, who helped. For those who don't know the history of Comics Coast to Coast, it all started out. It wasn't always these guys. Now, these are my favorite guys that I've ever been with, but that didn't sound right.
No.
But,
no.
Right? My favorite crew right now are these guys. But I started out doing this with Justin Thompson. And he works at the Shulls Studio, which he used to work at the Shulls Museum, and he was right next door to Stefan Pastis, who, if you don't know, he draws Pearls Before Swine, and which has had a great run lately because he had Bill Watterson, the famous Bill Watterson of Calvin and Hobbes, recently had him draw some of the comic.
Mm.
That was mind blowing to us in the comic world. That was like, you know, it was an amazing thing. And but Stefan Pastis helped me and Justin get this started. He was on one of our first episodes. Nice. Back, I think about episode two. And everything is archived.
I got to tell you, I haven't heard the origin story.
Right, right.
Comics Coast to Coast. That's even though I'm a part of it.
Absolutely. And and Justin was there for a while. And John Sanford of Chippy and Lupus, he directed Home on the Range when he was working at Disney. He was a great animator.
And recently he was the director of the How to Train Your Dragon television series.
Right, right. If you guys haven't watched that, that is a great. Does anybody go see How to Train Your Dragon 2 or seen the series? Oh my God, Frozen. It's better than Frozen. Can I say that?
Well, there's no little girls in the room, so I think you're safe.
Right. Yeah. Let it go. I don't want to hear that song ever again. But yeah, John Sanford, they both were on for a while, and life as it typically does, took hold, and they had to kind of step out and bow out for all. Tom Racine was one of my first co-hosts, and definitely one of my favorite. Had a great radio voice, but I kind of knew from the beginning that he was going to strike out on his own, and he did. He went on in
Tall Tale Radio,
yeah. which actually he merged that into interviews with, is it UComics or comics.com?
I want to say it's,
don't want to get it wrong.
GoComics?
Is it GoComics? Well, basically he was basically working for one of the syndicates and just doing interviews right there with these great cartoonists.
GoComics is the web version of Universal Press.
I think
that's the correct one that he was with, yeah.
Exactly. And he's been done Tall Tale Radio forever. Recently he stepped down from doing it. So this is a dangerous market, as you can tell. Pod fading is a very real danger in this market. But the thing about it, I think our group, though, is we're also passionate about it. I think we've stuck with it.
Yeah, and I think also, too, there's been a lot happening in comics in terms of the way that the model is shifting.
Right.
And the way that certain artists are being able to rise to the top. And
right.
It's given us more opportunity to talk to people we've never seen before, but also enables us to revisit people that we know we'd like to check in with and see how they're doing, but then they've got these amazing new projects because of Kickstarter or Patreon or whatever. And I feel like there's been a resurgence of, I don't want to say popularity, but awareness, I think, of individual creators doing
right, right. I think I agree with you because for a while it was, I know you guys know Scott Johnson, right? My Extra Life, you've seen that guy. He does a great comic. It seemed like only the big guys were getting any traction, like Scott Johnson, Scott Kurtz.
Who else can I think about?
There's so many.
Penny Arcade,
those guys.
XKCD.
Yeah, they got so big.
Oatmeal.
And that was
Oatmeal.
Yeah. Right. But now we've seen this shift with all these people who are coming up with comics on Tumblr, and so we're seeing people that. I'm seeing people that were on Tumblr that are having bigger numbers than Scott Kurtz was back in the day, just from all the social media.
It's a one touch reblog,
right?
You don't even have to type anything. You just kind of hit the little roundabout arrow, and away it goes. And all of your followers now get the same thing.
It's amazing because Scott Kurtz and those kind of guys and Johnson, they all had to build their audience slowly over time, and it's like they're overnight successes now and well deserved because their content is fantastic, but you may not even know them yesterday, and then today you're suddenly going through the archive and digging through, and it's amazing. What do you guys read any web comics? Come on, you must read something. What do you read?
Well, what's funny is I just talked to someone earlier. The panel before this one was about comics in general.
Right, right.
And afterwards someone came up to me and my wife Lana and said, you know what? I didn't even realize how much comics are actually in my life.
Oh, yeah.
He said, like, when I heard Comics Coast to Coast, I thought, oh, you know, DC Marvel.
Right.
And it didn't even occur to him that could include, you know, the Oatmeal and some of the other ones that people are always sending around on Facebook or posting on various sites. So I think it's there, and most people have experienced it, but they kind of tend to think of it as just like this. It's this little side thing that's part of the internet.
Right.
And they forget that, no, there's creators behind these, and usually a whole series behind even that one great comic that you saw, that you could backtrack and find a whole bunch of stuff in the same vein that would be just as good.
Right.
You know?
Now, Trek Nerd, I know your Trek Nerd is here with us. Daryl Skills, one of my favorite Twitter posters, and also on the morning stream. Is it almost daily now? Do you do it every day? Is it every day? Except for Friday, of course. Right, right. And you get asked or harassed about Star Trek trivia questions, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you surely must have a comic that you read on the daily. Anything? Don't say My Extra Life. I know you want to. You can also say Guy in a Bush.
Oh, I was a big fan of that.
That was a great comic, wasn't it? For those who don't know, I used to draw a comic that was
called... Well, I've got to say, I've run into a lot of people here that are fans of yours. And the first thing out of their mouth is, Dunaway needs to draw more comics.
Oh, absolutely.
And I agree.
It's a true story.
So, peer pressure. From now on, it's not... There you
it's
go.
True.
There
it's
you
true.
Go. I mean, like, it's no, hi, Brian, nice to meet you. It's, hi, Brian, draw more.
I've got someone who's following me actually all around because I did a unicorn with a manly muscles on his chest. And she wants me to hurry up and get the print or shirt or whatever ready.
That one made me laugh so hard the first time I saw it. It's like this image of a unicorn. Yeah. With like a cigarette hanging out of its mouth. It's got this big, hairy chest. God, it's just
brilliant. Curls?
It's a lot of fun. And that's always been my problem is I get these brilliant ideas that are kind of like one-offs, but even Matt has kind of tried to encourage me to do like a little project thing we were talking about.
We'll see where that goes to.
We'll see where that goes.
But I think you could get away with doing something kind of like Savage Chickens.
Right.
I mean, I don't know why you couldn't go that route. I know in the past you've often had like themed...
Right.
Comics, like you had the guy in a bush and all that.
Right,
But I think your humor is just so crazy and out there. You might as well just do like he does and just do that like...
One off, just do it?
Yeah, just one each comic make it its own isolated joke.
See, you know why I've avoided that? Because Scott Johnson always did that for the longest time. And I didn't want to be Scott Johnson's shadow, but you know what? There's worse shadows to be.
Yeah, well, right? I mean, he's not the only one to do it either.
No.
Gary Larson, you know. Yeah. Oh, you're in good company. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Where you pull your inspiration from would be very different.
True story. I'm totally different than Scott.
I mean, you're the South Carolina jokes,
I get them confused.
Right? Absolutely. So some of my Savage Chickens. If you have not read Savage Chickens, it's a Post-it note. He draws it on Post-it notes, and it's little chickens. Get your iPhones out. I know you have them with you. Get your little mobile devices out, and we're going to do a live Savage Chickens lookup because this guy is fantastic. And it was one of the things that prompted me to do something that – what's that?
Yeah. Right. He is the new Gary Larson in my mind.
He absolutely is. His name is Doug Savage, and we had him on Comics Coast to Coast 182. And,
we've had him, this was
the second time we had him on.
Yeah. Because he was down in Halifax, actually. He's in Vancouver. He's Canadian, and he came down to Halifax for HalCon last year just to visit.
Right.
And Joss and I ended up having dinner with him and his wife.
What?
It was really cool because, I mean, he gave me a copy of his book, and he signed it and drew a little sketch in it, but he, of course, drew in it like he draws in the Post-it notes with pens that have, like, needle tips to them. To watch this guy almost, like, just, like, his fingers were just sort of wiggling around, and then he goes, yeah, here's a cartoon, and he's like, how did you do... It's like a postage stamp, you know, and he has to do that with all of this stuff, and he was telling me that he draws Savage Chicken sometimes 3 and 4 times because if he messes up, he then has to start. You can't erase in a Post-it note.
This is true.
Destroys them. So he has to just put a new Post-it note down and a light cable, trace it over again.
Oh, really?
So it takes him that long. The one that gets published is like the fourth iteration often.
Oh, that's funny. So he does. I actually done that. I've put a Post-it note on top of another because remember when you used to do it with the flip books?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same idea. You just kind of, you want to put it over top of it so you get a frame of reference and do what you need to do. Well, that's interesting. No, I thought he did it right the first time time. See, that's kind of stuff you learn.
He can't pencil them either because you can't erase them.
You can't erase them on a Post-it note. I've done that.
While we're on the topic of favorites that we've talked to, I mean, you mentioned in the previous panel, I think it's worth bringing him up again, is Adam Huber of,
Bug.
Bug Martini. That's same thing. It's not necessarily, you know, overly complex art, but the writing is just so damn good every time. It's one of those ones that you read it, and just about every comic has a chuckle in it. And he's, you know, a lot of comic artists will set up their comic, you know, the first 3 panels are all set up, and then the fourth one is your joke. But with him, it's like every panel there's something funny in it. I don't know how he does it, you know, as often as he does and keeps...
Right, right. You know, it's always, it interests me now. I don't know if you guys are huge comic strip fans, because it's a sequential art, and it's art into itself, mm-hmm. being humorous within, you know, three or four panels. When I was a kid, I used to take the Burke Breath comics, which was why am I forgetting the name of it? Burke Breath, Bloom County. Bloom Thank County. You. Who said Bloom County? Love you. All right. I used to read Bloom County, which was kind of a pseudo political kind of comic that had recurring characters that were just fantastic. But I used to take his books, the compilations, and I would mark where he would have a punchline, because he would lots of times, he had a four panel strip, but he would lots of times put the punch in the third panel, and then there would be like a follow up panel that would just kind of linger. Mm-hmm. And it was the most interesting thing I'd seen. But yeah, you got to see all my comic collections, because they're not pristine. I have little post-it notes in them, and you know, I'll write little notes in the paper and say, okay, well, this guy's he's a genius. And I think that's where my passion for interviewing cartoonists come from, because of course I wanted to be a cartoonist, and I still do. I still love drawing. I still love making people laugh. But since I couldn't go talk to Burke Breath about what he was doing, I was analyzing it and putting it down in my own notes. But now that I'm old enough to and brave enough to do something as stupid as ask one of my heroes, hey, would you come on a show and let me, you know, harass you for about an hour about everything? I think that's where my passion for this show came from. You guys have a did you
I like
guys talk, study?
I like talking shop. I mean, right. I'm, you know,
oh,
I'm,
who doesn't?
Yeah. Well, but the questions in the doc for our show, they're always is always me that seems to be getting into like, what pens do you use?
Do you
have it on the iPad? Like, I'm a process junkie because I've taken a long time to kind of hone mine, and the issue that I never had was, you know, being able to talk to Bill Watterson or Frank Cho, right. and to ask them like, hey, so what do you use, like a Sable number one brush, or like how do you do all the things that you do? And for the folks that are listening to Comics Coast to Coast, I always want to make sure we hit those notes, because, I mean, obviously, you know, there's fundamentals are key and stuff like that, but sometimes it's frustrating when you're trying to learn and trying to get better, and the tool that you're using is just not quite the right one for the job.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, you know, having the right screwdriver for or the right tool for the right construction job. You need the right tool to cartoon, and if you're looking at someone's line art and kind of going, all right, well, he's got 20 years of experience, but he's using this particular Z brush or whatever.
Right.
If it's only a couple bucks, why not pick it up with yourself and practice with it? But if you don't know that, you can't do it. So it's nice to be able to talk to people about that and get that information out there, because people don't often just like post their new comic and like, hey, so I drew this with a number two pencil number one Sable brush with indie ink. Like, no, I mean, you don't think to communicate that when you're blogging about stuff. So that's always my favorite part about interviewing creators.
See, I think I'm the opposite of you. I'm usually more interested in the philosophy, what's going on in someone's headspace.
Right.
You know, because for me, unless that's all in place and solid, all the rest doesn't matter for anything. I mean, I've always said, you know, you can, the tools are great, but it's the artist that makes the tools great. You know, you can give a monkey access to, you know, the Pixar's finest equipment and software, and they're just going to pound on the keys. But you give, you know, an artist a box of Crayolas, and they're going to make something that's incredible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does help to know the tools, and I'm still obviously fascinated by all that stuff as well. But I think Joel and I were actually talking the other day, and we were saying, well, we were wondering, oh, are we putting out shows quicker mm-hmm. than where the new web comics are being born?
Right, right.
So then we were thinking, okay, well, if that's the case, do we make this just about like artists in general?
Right.
Do we start, because we had Kenneth Cole on recently.
Nicholas Cole is a beautiful
Kenneth
man.
Kenneth Cole is the guy with the bags, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So Nicholas Cole, yeah.
Nicholas Cole.
Who did the Maleficent stuff.
Yeah. So he did the illustrations for a young adult novel called The Curse of Maleficent, which came out with the Disney movie. He's also currently doing the Dawngate Chronicles, which is technically a webcomic, but it's like, it's a produced webcomic with like a writer and an illustrator and a colorist, and it's all based on an EA property, a video game called Dawngate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's beautifully illustrated, and most of his work is commercial illustration. I mean, he doesn't really do comics per se, with the exception of this new venture into Dawngate.
But it's fascinating, nonetheless.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it fits the bill, because he's still, even with just a single panel illustration in a children's book or something, you're still trying to do some sort of visual communication of a story, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. And I've often felt like that's like one of the things is to have some kind of great artwork, you know, that's handy to have. And then also that it's available to see online, because a lot of times when we're talking about the artist, we're like, oh, you got to go check this out, you know, look this up right now. And so I think maybe we'd kind of broaden the definition a little bit.
But. Absolutely. And I, back to the point you said earlier, like, are we doing more interviews than there are new talent? I don't think we are, because I can't keep up with all the new talent. I mean, once again, going back to these Tumblr cartoonists who are just popping up, it seems like it's an endless amount of new cartoonists coming out every day.
I think you're right. I just don't think they necessarily all fit into the web comic.
Right, right.
Like, what's it, not niche, but like a pigeonhole. Like it,
right, right.
It's becoming a broader thing. You know, it's just like a lot of web comics for a long time were very similar to syndicated comic strips. But then now, something that I really enjoy are the journal comics that are out there. Mm-hmm. I mentioned in the comics panel earlier, Beaumarie's by Beaum. Like, it's just a brilliant slice of life from her life in Montreal. And that kind of stuff, I think, is becoming more and more popular. Wesley Hall from PC Weenies.
Nameless PC.
Yeah. PC Weenies is Krishna.
Right, so right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Who's also, if you don't know these names, I mean, you got to
check
these guys out.
How many
people read PC Weenies? You guys at least familiar with him? Come on, you PC Weenies. You know you want it. He's been around forever. He did Dork Tower way back in the...
I'm
sorry, that's Adam.
That's the guy that draws stuff for Munchkin. John Kovalik.
We've interviewed John Kovalik on the show, too.
We've interviewed everybody.
Right.
Or most of them.
Right. And man, getting to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff, what's your favorite story from behind the scenes? Can you think of one? I mean, the fact that that Nicholas Cole talked about how tightly he was in with getting the Maleficent stuff, that he might have actually influenced the movie and some of the style doing that book. That was a good behind the scenes thing that I couldn't believe. And we're talking to a cartoonist who influenced a movie that I went and saw.
Yeah. Behind the scenes. The guy that Rocko's Modern Life.
Oh yeah, Joe Murray.
Joe Murray. The behind the scenes about how the cartoon.
How much crack was he on?
Well, how the television animation industry really works and how it grinded his gears the wrong way. Like that was an interesting behind the scenes.
Well, I like in that same interview how he was saying that it was because it was around the same time as like the whole Ren and Stimpy thing.
Right, right.
And he was saying how it was wonderful because like all the business people there had no idea what it was that was making these things work.
Right.
And they had so much creative freedom. And he came up with like the character called Chokey Chicken, and they were like, "All right, sure." You know,
that's because
like,
they didn't know what they were getting into.
They're just like, "Yeah, you're the cartoonist, I guess. Do your cartoony thing." And so I think that was pretty. I'd love it if things were at that stage again, where like the business people had no friggin' clue what made this magic happen.
Now they can just Google it, and they would immediately be going, "No, that's not right. We can't do that." Right. So but we in Comics Coast to Coast, we go through phases like nobody's business. Like we'll go for a while, and we'll hit up a bunch of animators because we'll enjoy doing the animation stuff, and then we'll hit up a bunch of web cartoonists, and then we'll kind of go through some syndicated cartoonists. And most recently, we had realized, and this was partially due to Jocelyn, our note taker. Mm-hmm. I say note taker, but she's much more than that.
Oh, way much more.
But she also secured interviews for us for a while. So we said, hey, you know, secure the interviews for us so that we can focus just on the questions. And so she did, and she started getting all these women, and we had never thought to approach. Women cartoonists, man, is that a boys' club or what?
Well, and the first thing is, it's not that we didn't think to, and Jocelyn didn't think to either. She was just pulling in recommendations from Twitter.
So we think it was actually
art that she had saw. She didn't necessarily know that they were female artists until she contacted them, because some of them kind of had like, you know, ambiguous names like Charlie or something.
Right,
and it just. By accident, we happened to schedule. We sent out emails to, or she sent out emails to male and female cartoonists. But then all the females responded first. So we had this like month and a half of like.
Well, it was more than a month and a half.
We went a long time.
Then we found out we preferred interviewing ladies.
Well, Brian's on better behavior when we interview girls.
I absolutely am.
Which is nice.
I try not to. But so I think there's really just been a I think it's really a reflection of a couple of things. First of all, Jocelyn came in, and she probably was open to more new people at the time because I wasn't really keeping up with it as much as I should have, and Joss was actually looking. I think there's been a real surge of female cartoonists that are hitting the market.
And I mean, like, since I've taken over for Jocelyn for the scheduling and trying to line up interviews since the beginning of the year, and a lot of the artists that I'm contacting are female, and it's right. I mean, it's half and half, if not maybe slightly swinging heavier on the girl side for cartoonists, and it's not that I'm going out and seeking them out. It's just right. Like I see the nice art on Tumblr, go, ooh, I like that. Who draws that? Oh, she does. And then try to line up an interview, and it seems to be working in that way.
So. Right. Lana, do you ever get, like you're interviewing another girl? What is this show turning into? Does she ever get that? Matt,
No.
You're straight. I'll tell you something about Matt. Matt, all right. I'll tell you something about Matt right now. Matt's eating time is right before the show, and if you listen to the show, he's usually chowing down on something. So Lana told me that you do most of the cooking.
I do almost all of the cooking.
Right. So is there anything you're special at? Are you really good at something?
No. I just have a ton of recipe books, and I just dig in them and pull out random things that look good, and so I'm always eating something weird. And
well, I love it. It entertains me every time we start the show. Lana, what did you have? Crockpot recipes.
Big on the crockpot. Yeah.
That's a typical cartoonist there, because it's like I've only got 5 minutes. What can
dump,
I do?
Dump things in a pot and eat an hour later.
Right. You know what though? I can't stand crockpot cooking because you start in the morning time and you have to smell it all day.
That is tough, especially if you're working from home.
Right. Can't do that. And that's how Comics Coast to Coast goes. I'll be talking 1 minute, and then I'll throw something out there that has absolutely nothing to do with comics.
You're good at the segues.
We know exactly what kind of cheese Nicholas Cole has in his fridge.
We do. That. But, man, was that beard not fantastic? I mean,
the guy has a great mustache.
Yeah, if you're into beards and mustaches, you got to look up Nicholas Cole. He has grown quite a...
He's rocking the handlebar.
He is.
Something fierce.
Yeah. He is.
So from the behind-the-scenes stuff, just from an interview perspective, like forget about like you know your favorite comics. Who do you think would be one of your favorite interviews over the past, you know, including some of the interviews that we haven't been a part of, like say the last 200,
right? In the last 200 episodes, by far Joe Murray. That was like one of my top five that I ever want to interview. I also want to interview John Kovalik from Ren and Stimpy.
No, that's even a better show. John Kovalik. You mean talk about John K.
John K. I can't say his last
Chris
name.
Chris Lucy.
Yeah. Chris Falusi.
Yeah.
You worked with Chris for actually for a little while, didn't you?
Very, very short period, yeah. No, right. I used to work at Copernicus in Halifax, and we did the Tenacious D.
Oh, yeah, video. You guys. So Jack Black, John, Tenacious D. Remember that?
John was up. He directed two. He did a Weird Al Yankovic music video and then Tenacious D one. And they both have very similar styles because he was just like art directing and directing the whole thing. Right. And he was in Halifax. He stayed at like a bed and breakfast for a month or two while they were there and working with him. He is an extraordinarily generous man with his time. Yeah. Like he would go out to a bar, you know, after work with people on like a Thursday or Friday night, and just sit there and look at people's sketchbooks and sketching them and have fun. Like, and these are all 20-year-old animators. They're just kind of like, it's John Kay. Oh my god,
right? Ren and Stimpy, come on!
Yeah, and he was just like, nah, man, just like come on out and have a beer and have fun. It was great.
I like those, and I'd love if we could have more like the big names. But I also love when we interview people who totally should be big names,
right?
But no one, for whatever reason, knows who they are.
Like a
good example is, although she is kind of getting the fame she deserves, I'm going to forget her name, but the one who does Plume. Plume comic, look it up. It is incredible art. It's a great story too. But this is someone who you look at their work and you're like, why does no one know this person exists? You know, this is gorgeous. So those, I like those a lot too, because, and
Kaylin,
if we can
Kaylin
help
Smith.
Kaylin Smith, that's
yep,
right.
Kaylin Smith. Smith?
Yeah, because if there's any way to help people like that, like I'd love to do it, you know?
Right, right. See, that's I think that's one of the things that we kind of, we make a lot of connections for other cartoonists too on the show, because one of the things that's no longer very very prevalent in the comic strip industry, especially, is the training. Like you don't see many people. You can't go to a comic strip now and get on the job training like you used to do, like Jim Davis back in the day.
Oh, like apprenticeships.
Right, apprenticeship. Yeah. He got his start by doing who was he? Who did he apprentice for? You guys remember? I can't remember. Anybody?
Was it the Family Circus guy?
Was it Family Circus?
I thought it was like Glenn Keane's dad.
It might have been somebody like that. And you know, that just doesn't exist as much anymore. But we love. I think that's what podcasting can bring to the table. It can kind of bring these connections that you might would have only been able to get before through apprenticeship or something. John, by the way, Jim Davis still does apprenticeship. He has. Mm-hmm. We interviewed Barbarian. Who am I thinking of? Joel, pull it for me. Matt.
Barbarian.
Yeah, the Barbarian.
Yeah, I know.
He draws. Anyway,
Jim Davis. He works at Paul's Garfield Inc.
He works at Paul's Inc.
Blank.
Hold on a second. I'm going to look this up. You keep talking, Matt. This is what we do on a show a lot too, Tom.
I
can type a lot faster on a keyboard than I can.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
God, I can't remember his name.
Question? Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered following up with some artists like Tom Bancroft? Didn't seem like all the questions were answered in the time that you had.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that happens a lot.
Yeah, constantly.
We're actually Daniel Lieske from Germany is coming back on in the next few weeks at some point. We don't have a date ironed out, but he at the time was working on chapter 6 of his webcomic, and he was supposed to release it in May, and there was a delay. So we've delayed his return until the release date. So whenever he has a clear yes, chapter 6 will be done, we'll be bringing him back on the show to talk about that. So
right. Is Dave the Barbarian? That's what I was thinking of, I think. Is that right? That's not right. That's something else. Come on, Brian. What are you doing?
It's funny that you mentioned Tom Bancroft, and you were talking about education. Tom's site, Taught by a Pro, he works with several other artists and animators. And one of the things that they have is Michael Yance, who draws The Norm, and he does drawing a comic strip. So he kind of goes over the basics with, you know, an hour-long or two-hour-long video. I haven't actually looked at it yet. But the cost of these things is $10. And you're talking about dealing with professional animators that are, say, like how to animate fire or hair, you know, the basics of animation, character design for animation. Tom Bancroft does one about drawing appealing female characters for comics and animation.
Which we'd all appreciate, right?
Yeah.
but all of these things are becoming just like podcast interviews, making the stuff more accessible. The pricing on these things is $10. And like, you don't have to go to, you know, get an art degree, you know, to learn how to draw comics or even buy, you know, a $40 book. Like, you can dip your toes in with a $10 video.
Right, right.
Which is really cool. My favorite interview, I think, was Dave Kellett.
Dave Kellett was a great
guy. Yeah, that was my... I mean, he hadn't released Stripped yet. He was still ramping up to that, so unfortunately we couldn't talk to him about it too much. Someone else will probably have back on the show if we get a chance.
Man, he had so much information because at the time he was talking to all these other cartoonists.
Oh, yeah, he has so much. Like, just the man's brain is just filled with mm-hmm. everything. Not to mention, he's got a master's in, like, cartooning history.
Right, right.
From the University of London.
I didn't even know Brian. That was a thing.
Yeah,
right?
Apparently.
He probably made it. He's like, this is now a course.
Yeah, I demand it. I put enough work into this. It is now a course. But no, interviewing him was like a highlight for me because, I mean, when I first started getting into webcomics, they had just released the book. Straub and Kurtz, Geiger and Kellett had just written that, and I followed that, and it was a big influence for me. And his strip and his consistency over the last 10 or 12 years of his webcomic was really cool to talk to him.
Absolutely.
And very difficult to keep my cool.
Yeah, it was. And we get a lot of information sometimes that can tell us that we can't share, which kills us.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I would love to share stuff. But just about every interview we have, we usually end the interview with Chris thanking them for being on the show. And we always tell them to come back on the show because we would love to hear when they get through with their project. And lately, that's been even more important because we are kind of opening up this story about these artists like Snorples and Meeps and mm-hmm. these other Kickstarter projects.
Yeah, right? That's another one that I love is the fact that we can potentially help people achieve their project
by
making it a little bit more known.
Right, right.
I mean, I just love the whole Kickstarter idea in general. I mean, the fact that someone can can ask a community, hey, you know, I'd like to make this thing. Can you help me make it?
Right.
You know, that idea was just not even possible even a handful of years ago. So I love that. And then the fact that we can do our part and kind of put a blast out and let a whole lot of people know that this exists and you should be interested in it.
Right.
Like, I love that.
Now, of course, like, you probably know that, well, we know it. Comics Coast to Coast may not have the number that some of the numbers some of the other shows do, but we do it because it's a passion of ours. Mm-hmm. And I've seen other shows on our network, and I've been involved with other shows that had fewer numbers, and it would just pop out of existence. But for some reason, I just can't let this one go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I constantly hang on, and as a result, we've had a lot of cartoonists. I feel like we probably speak mostly to other cartoonists. I mean, a lot of cartoonists listen to us.
I would think, yeah. I think that most of the listening audience
mostly in the industry.
Either in the industry or trying to be.
Right.
Or
is anybody trying to break into the webcomic industry? Is, anybody kind of thought about it, said, you know what, I draw funny. I write funny. No? Come on.
Not in this particular moment. I'm looking at you, Trek Nerd.
Trek Nerd, I know you want to do a comic. You want to do one? Me and you? Right here? No, all right, fine. Well, you know what? You just go back and drink your urine or whatever it was that they had this morning.
It's a fizzy yogurt in space.
I actually had a little taste of that, and it was kind of sour. You said it wasn't bad. It was kind of sour. I've never tasted urine, but I can't help but to think that's hopefully not how it would taste.
Yeah.
Sorry, off on a tangent.
Yeah. So how many Kickstarter?
Like, oh my gosh! Almost every episode lately seems to be involved at least with some Kickstarter, and usually the reason why is because we'll send out I think it might be partially because of the way we're looking for people who have current projects, and we want to talk to those people. So we want to know. We don't want to talk to somebody. We've done this before. You get an interview, and you're like, "Hot dog! This person's super talented," but really, they're just kind of set on cruise control right now. And so you'll talk to them. There's nothing really new happening, and there's nothing really interesting. So the only thing you really get from them is, you know, what tools they've been drawing, which is great. Mm-hmm. Joel loves that part. But then, you know, there's not really any great new stories to tell. So lots of times we look for interviews. We look for people who are on the go, on the move.
Has something going, yeah. I mean,
right.
Whether they've got a new book that's just been published or,
right,
you
right.
know, just returned from or are about to head to a big con. Is usually something I try to, when I schedule people, I try to say, like, hey, like, come to a time, like, come on the show at a time when there's something important happening or circling your work.
Right, right.
But, and the easy thing for this kind of stuff is, of course, the Kickstarters and the crowdfunding stuff, because people are just like intensely marketing their stuff with right. during those 30 or 40 days that they're doing their.
Is anybody stuff. Got a Kickstarter project going? Come on. No Kickstarter projects? You'd be support anything. Is your name Nicole Spagnuolo? Because that girl backs
everything.
Kickstarter yeah. project ever. Yeah. Matter of fact, she'll usually do that. She'll say, I didn't realize I'd even Kickstarted this one, and now they sent me this stuff. I think she just did a book. She just Kickstarted a book not too long ago that was like robot, some kind of robot story or something, which then makes me remember that we interviewed
DaCosta recently,
who is... Who was a great guy?
March of Robots.
If you haven't looked at that,
yeah.
If there's no other reason in the world to listen to Comics Coast to Coast, it is so that you can find all these new great comics. We do a lot of research,
and a lot of the stuff there. You can see online,
right.
very easily. And that one's another one that's really worth looking up because he's one of the types of artists where everything that he draws, it looks like it belongs printed on something, like mm-hmm. on a T-shirt or. You know, on a, I don't know, a toaster.
Yeah,
a toaster.
Or on a doghouse systems. Have you guys seen that downstairs? Yeah. The doghouse systems.
His stuff would fit right in.
It would be perfect.
Doghouse system. Yeah.
You know, April Ness is here too, and that's Viking Lass.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's doing. She did one, and it is beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
And she's downstairs, by the way. If you're not,
yeah, she's right next to it, as a matter of fact.
Right. And she's down there with Andreas Ekberg.
Yep.
And oh, excellent. Yeah.
Have you seen his new his little totem thing?
No.
Does anybody know what I'm talking about? What do they call it? It's from the that new app game. I have it somewhere. Does anybody know the name of that game? You know what I'm talking about?
Monument Valley.
Monument Valley.
Yeah.
Monument Valley. Has anybody played that?
I think Jocelyn played that.
Yeah, we'll see. If she was here, she could talk about it.
Yeah, but she's not.
But she's not.
It's very. It's one of those new kind of minimalistic looking right. games,
yes.
which I like. And then the weird part of it is, and the cool part, is that it's got this very M.C. Escher thing going
right,
on.
Right, right. Perspective switches,
If you turn this block a certain way, some two paths that didn't look like they fit together suddenly do. And it's like, and sideways steps and ladders. It's just a crazy, crazy game.
Right. It is a crazy game. And so is that guy. He's Andres Ekberg from, he's from Sweden originally, but he lives in New York now.
Yeah, I don't know that part.
Yeah, yeah. Him and his girlfriend are here, and he's not. He's actually been working with Hakito. Does anybody remember Hakito? You remember that guy?
Yeah,
yeah. Skyhawk. He's working at Nickelodeon now up in New York, which is. I want to get some interviews. I'm going to totally get an interview out of him to make him
absolutely
get somebody cool. You got to use what you got.
I had forgot that he moved to Nickelodeon.
He did. He moved to Nickelodeon, and he seems to be doing great. They called me. They FaceTimed me. Shut up. And they FaceTimed me from the Nickelodeon. They were eating lunch down there, and I tried to get interview then too. I'm relentless.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, who's around you? You know, it's like, is there any talent there? Let me talk to him. Get him on the phone. But yeah, I love those guys. So there's a lot of talent here at. In the whole nerd-tacular groups.
Yeah.
And are you going to be doing any doodle challenges like we talked about on Twitter? We talked some trash on Twitter about doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I'm on board. I don't know when it's happening.
Right.
So
April Ness, she lined it up last year.
She wants to do it again this year, so she said she'd let me know.
Right.
What was the deal with that? How did that run? What was
last year or this year?
Last year.
Last year, we just all hung around and sketched for like an hour, just kind of in the lobby on the comfy couches. It was just kind of a social thing. But this year, she wants to do something where she gets a bunch of artists together that are here at Nerdtacular, and then we all have like kind of cue cards in front of us. We draw for like a few minutes and then pass it down.
Right. What's the best way to follow for that? Like Twitter? Should it be following you?
Follow Viking Lass on Twitter.
Viking Lass on Twitter.
She'll be posting it out. She's here until Monday, as are most of us. So I think that they'll.
Hammond, you have a question?
Yeah, actually, I was going to make a statement. I actually did an episode of my show where I talked to four different artists and I gave them five things to draw.
Did you really?
And then we revealed them live during the show.
Right.
Them because they did it in the void, and then we talked about the process that they used.
Right. Right. Oh, I love Don Kelly.
And
you get Don Kelly on there? Right. Very good. And what's the name of that podcast?
Beyond the Playlist.
Beyond the Playlist. I've been on that, haven't I?
Yeah.
Matt, you've been on it?
I do not believe I have. No. No?
Yeah. Not yet, but soon.
Yeah.
Soon. So anybody draw? Come on, you people. Your artist off. Lana draws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
You like to doodle a little bit?
A little bit.
A little bit. What you got? You got a sketchbook with you?
I don't.
I've seen some sketchbooks this weekend. You went to art school? Where at? Missouri Southern? Right. This is how it's going to feel when you become a famous artist and I interview on Comics Coast to Coast. How do you like it?
It's good. I like it.
Is that right? It's not bad.
I'm a programmer.
You're a programmer now? See, that's stupid. That's what I did too. Don't do that. It'll blow your life away, man. Yeah, I was always a person of two minds, and it seems like the logical side pays better.
Yeah. That's just how it works.
Right.
So we've only got 10 minutes.
Right.
Q&A, anybody have any questions?
Yeah. Question for you guys. What was the event that triggered you from being, that made you decide you were going to pursue art as a profession?
Right.
Ooh,
what made you decide? What was that defining moment?
There was never a choice. I think I was always drawing and I was always doing cartoons. I found out that a local... editorial cartoonist, like he had a book out and I got it for a gift as a birthday or something like that, and my dad would show me his work in the paper. I didn't get the cartoons obviously because they're above my head, but it was my first exposure to somebody who got paid to do that every day. So I thought, okay, well, that's an option. And I've never had any.
I like how, well, you just yes, that's an option. That's,
yeah.
Well, how old were you? You're very mature for your age.
Well, I was like 10.
Well, it's that right. Or astronaut.
Yeah, well, that's
or,
what yeah. I mean. I was there was never a fireman. There was never pro athlete or anything like that. It was always drawing of some sort, and it bounces around within the industry. Like when really early on in high school, it was comic books, like Hero Comics. That moved on to comic strips. in later high school, university, and then swung to animation after university when I realized that my BFA was, I can't use a four-letter word with a young kid here, but not worth as much as I paid for it. So I had to find something else a little bit easier to be, I guess, pursued as a professional artistic adventure. But then it came full circle back to comics eventually. And it's one of those things that has always been like a flame for me. It's just been be paid to create. And I've learned over the years that even though comic strip cartooning is the passion, I don't know if I'd want to do it every day. I don't know if that's what I would want to do alone for a living. I get commissions. I do some animated work. I do some graphic design. My friend Ryan Murphy and I just redesigned Tom Bancroft's website. So since he's been on the show, he's now got a new website from us. And that was extremely fun. And that was graphic design. I didn't draw anything. But it was just creative. And I feel like as you get older, your horizons broaden as far as your creative endeavors. And what satisfies that kind of creative itch changes. But I've always just wanted to draw stuff and create stuff for a living. So there was never any kind of epiphany.
Right. What set you in motion, Matt?
Well, I'm similar to Joel. It's basically all I ever wanted. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be an artist, but the animator thing, I can actually remember that the exact moment where I was like, yes, animation is the thing for me.
Right.
Because I knew about art and I could draw and all that, I knew what was involved in animation. And we went, like, it was like a silly little class trip over to the public library or something. We were going to go watch 101 Dalmatians. And there's this one particular shot where the main character, you know, the English guy, comes kind of jogging down the stairs or whatever. He's whistling and humming and writing and all that. And it was so realistic. I didn't know what rotoscoping was.
Right, right.
So I was like, oh, my God, you know, someone was talented enough to make that look that real.
Right.
It just blew my mind. I was like, you know, how is that even possible? So it just fascinated me. And so all I've ever wanted to be is an animator. And thankfully, that's what I've been for the past 17 years.
Right, right.
For
those not familiar with rotoscoping, that was a process that Disney started using, correct? And it was
basically they would film an actor doing a motion, and then they would essentially trace it, but you know they would alter the
source.
This
is before computers.
Yeah, and some of the stuff is just gorgeous that you can do with it. But I still kind of tend to prefer when it's done without that assistance.
Right, right. You have to guess perspective and that kind of stuff.
But yeah, so it's just all I've ever wanted to be in, so I've always thrown everything into that angle of things.
Right. My I started out, the thing that got me started on being a cartoonist is because I have insecurities about whether people were laughing at me. So, true story. And my mom, I used to ask my mom, because I wanted to know what was funny. What was funny? I've always wanted to know what was funny. So I used to bug my mom. And the thing I never understood was, I remember getting the comics pages and going, this is supposed to be something that a kid consumes, but why am I not laughing? I don't get the jokes. So that set me on this path of bugging the crap out of my mom every time, asking her what it meant. And so I would ask my mom every time what this comic meant. And over time, I just kind of developed this love for writing things that were not easy to see right on the surface. Because then I realized, you know, I could be in on the joke. I didn't have to be the end of the joke. I could be in on the joke, and I could create the jokes. And that's pretty much everything from everything I do, whether it's podcasting or humor or anything. It was because I wanted to be in on the joke. I didn't want to be on the outside.
Yeah.
How's that for you? Analyze that. Wendy, I got Wendy. Where's Wendy at? I need her now.
Yeah.
But thank you for that question, Hammond. Is there any more questions? Got one over here?
With all the different artists that you guys go through and interview,
right,
all the different mediums of expression that they use, do you guys ever get an opportunity or a curiosity to explore that, which differs from what you guys
know? Oh, my. Yes.
Oh,
me, God, especially. Every time. And see, that's a danger, too, man, because for an artist, because it's easy to try to find that perfect pencil or that perfect thing or that perfect medium to express yourself. But the only problem with that is you spend more time learning than creating. And yeah, it's a dangerous, slippery slope, but I do love it. Every time I see somebody do something and I find out how they did it, I'm like, I got to go do it now. I've got to go figure out the process, and then I don't ever create anything. Matt?
I think there's always something that kind of slips in. You know, someone might even have a style drastically different from mine, but I might see something about how they approach it or whatever, and it sometimes I'll find it has kind of slipped into my work without my knowledge, and I'll be like, oh, okay, that's where I got that right from, you know? Because I know there was a couple of guys I worked with in my first professional animation job that were hugely influential on my cartooning style.
Right.
But I wasn't conscious of it at the time. I wasn't like, oh, let me see how they do it and then imitate them. But it just kind of just what's good just goes into you and comes out in your work.
Right.
Whether you want it or not. I mean, none of us lives in a vacuum. So.
Yeah. I remember a few years ago I was interviewed by the guys in province of New Brunswick and they do a show called Where Monsters Dwell. And they had not read or had seen any other interviews with me because they like to do their stuff pretty off the cuff. And one of the guys gave me this huge compliment, and he said, like, I see a little bit of Calvin and Hobbes, I see a little bit of Frank Cho, and I see a little bit of Bill Amond in your work. And I was just like, you just named my top three influences when I was right in my 20s, when I was learning how to cartoon. And without realizing it, like, my personal style has become kind of like a sandwich of that stuff with some, you know, flourishes over the years. And that's always been really kind of cool. And I see myself looking at some of the people we interview and kind of going, like, I like the way that they colored that. And I mean, I do a black and white comic, but I do color work for clients. And sometimes it's like, you know, I wonder how they did that effect, or I like their color palettes. One thing that I know specifically has been worked into the Starcrossed has been the use of a brush pen. Mm-hmm. And it's not been like, oh, hey, like, I'm going to go learn how to use this and never implement it. And I forced myself to use it on the comic, which means mistakes, which meant some messy fixes in Photoshop and stuff. But eventually, I used it in a way that suited me. It sped me up as far as my inking was concerned. It gave me a better, more cartoony feel to some of the things I wanted, fur and hair and things that really were suited for the brush pen. And it was great. And it was because we interviewed somebody that they did their entire comic in brush pen, and you just want to strangle them. Like, it looked amazing. You're just kind of like, how do you do that? And it's funny how you can, to counteract something I said earlier, say, like, you know, you want to try that tool. Well, sometimes that tool doesn't necessarily meet your style of an existing property. Like, I use pens a lot when I draw Starcrossed. And, you know, to switch to entirely brush, it doesn't look like Starcrossed anymore. But some things, you know, it works well for trees and background. Mm-hmm. And it enabled me to do faster, deeper environments, you know, for my comic. And that's been something I've pulled away from interviews, is seeing people use tools in ways that I can incorporate into my work.
Right.
Kind of a flip side of that question, though, that I equally love is when we see artists and they do something completely different from how I would do it, and I know I'd never want to do it that way, but I love how they do it. You know, I would never, like, want to draw that way or apply the color in that way, but man, they've got it down.
Right.
Like, I love seeing the differences. The fact that you can have someone who's just doing really sketchy stuff over here, and then someone who's doing something highly polished over here, and stick figures over here, and somehow they all work. Like, that's magic. Why is that the case? You know, how is it that there is no one perfect standard? Like, I love that. That's fascinating to me. Like, it's like alchemy or something, you know? They found their own personal combination of things to make magic. I love that.
That's interesting about you, Matt. I didn't know that. Lana, you have something for us?
Yeah. Can you tell us something about your fan art?
Yeah, tell us about the fan art.
Which fan art?
Come on.
This is my wife's question, by the way.
Right.
She's trying to make me look good. So
too late. You already look fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. I do fan art occasionally for people. I did even something for Mr. Duggan.
You did one for me, and you did one for the Kaylin Smith.
Yeah, I did one for her. I did one for Brubaker.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who was briefly on the show, and
right,
and then just through poor he access had, to connections.
Tales of a Checkered Man.
Tales of Checkered Man, which I thought was awesome.
He moved and his internet went down. That's how he lose some host. He moved and he just didn't have very good internet anymore.
Which sucked. I mean, he kept trying. You could see he was willing to give it a go, but he just did not have access to a good connection. Yeah.
So, that was the saddest story probably of the – and it's a great way to end the show. That's it. That's all the time we have.
Ended on a sad note.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for all you guys who showed up. We had a great time. Do listen to Comics Coast to Coast. You can go to comicscoasttocoast.com and follow me on Twitter at @TheBrianDunaway. Follow Joel Duggan at
Joel Duggan.
Joel Duggan. Right. And then follow Matt at Matt_the_WadY with the underscores.
Because someone's squatting on my name.
Perfect. All right. Squatting on my name is even a better way to end the show. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next week. Awesome. Thank y'all for coming to this show. We really do appreciate it. It's going to be even bigger next year.
Yeah.